ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति।
Chapter 10, Vibhuti Yoga. Please recollect that in the beginning we said the entire Bhagavad Gita is nothing but the expansion of Tattvamasi, explanation of Tattvamasi. So Tvam aspect, Tattvamasi is a declaration in the Upanishad. There are four aphorisms given in the Upanishads. First aphorism is Prajnanam Brahman. The Brahman is in the form of consciousness. Prajnanam Brahman. Consciousness is Brahman. And that consciousness, the what? Tattvamasi. That is the second aphorism. Tattvamasi. That consciousness, that reality, the what? Not what you think yourself to be today. So Tattvamasi. So the Prajnanam Brahma statement is called as statement of declaration, a lakshana vakya, just a declaration that consciousness is Brahman, and then that consciousness, the what, Tattvamasi, is a statement of upadesha, advice, statement of advice or upadesha vakya. Having heard the upadesha from the guru, the student, Shishya, is supposed to go and practice. The vakya for practice, statement of practice, or abhyasa vakya is aham, I am atma brahma. I am atma brahma means this atma is Brahman. This essential nature of me is nothing but that consciousness. I am Atma Brahma is the Abhyasa Bhakya. And when you practice this, negating the non-self and asserting the self separates from the non-self and you are established in the self. And when you are established in the self, you declare. When you become one with Atma, you declare Aham Brahmasmi. Which is statement of experience. Anubhava Vakya. So Prajnanam Brahma, Tattvamasi,
I am
Atma Brahma,
Aham
Brahmasmi. Four aphorisms in the Upanishads. So this Upadesa Vakya, Tattvamasi, is what is the entire Bhagavad Gita is all about. So Bhagavad Gita is also Upadesa Shastra. It is actually introducing you to yourself. The misery, the cause of all our suffering is due to the ignorance of our true self. So the scripture's job is to introduce us to our true self. And practicing the sadhana prescribed according to one's capacity, consistently, one is supposed to reveal the self from within to oneself, realize the self. That is the goal of life. So, Tvam aspect. So, the Tvam aspect is described in the first six chapters. In fact, described this way, the more emphasis is on the Tvam aspect in the first six chapters. The individual, who you are, the nature of the individual, right? What is the nature of individual? Jiva Swarupa. And The jiva has to put in the effort. How should he put in the effort? Jiva prayatna, karma yoga, is described in the first 6 chapters. In the middle of 6 chapters, where the emphasis is on tat, divinity, that reality or God, there the discussion is about the nature of God, Ishvara Swarupa, and the importance of Ishvara's Anugraha, the grace of God. This is what is emphasized in the middle chapter, Ishvara Swarupa and Ishvara Anugraha. The first 6 is Jiva Swarupa and Jiva Prayatna, which is individual's nature and individual's effort. The middle 6 is Lord's nature and Lord's grace. Tat
aspect.
Ishvara
Pradidana. The grace is?
Ishvara
Anugraha. Anugraha.
Then the last 6
Lord's nature and Lord's grace.
The last 6 chapters talks about connection between the individual and divinity. So in fact in the last 6, 13, 14, 15, jnanam is given and the qualities to attain the jnanam is discussed in 16 and 17 and 18 is again a summary. Now first 6 chapters emphasize on karma, middle 6 chapters emphasize on bhakti, last 6 chapters emphasize on jnana. We are in the middle 6 chapters. 10th chapter is in the middle portion where the emphasis is on bhakti, God's nature and the importance of Lord's grace. Right?
Sorry, the third
Asi. Asi means the connection between the two. Tattvamasi, that thou art. You are nothing but divinity.
So that's the individual and the
divinity. Tvam and tat, how they are equal. That is what the connection is established through jnana in the last portion. So when in the middle portion he is talking about the nature of God, this is a very interesting debate that goes on everywhere, isn't it? Whenever they talk about God, everybody pulls off their own theory about God. We use the subtle intellect and posit God. We use the same subtle intellect and then reject God. Some accept God, some reject God, right? Even when you are studying, in the beginning itself, in the second chapter, you say, Ashcharya, Ashcharya, everything is Ashcharya. One who hears this as Ashcharya, sees this as Ashcharya, and one who speaks of this, yet nobody knows this. Even in this chapter 10, he is going to say, that which I am going to reveal to you now, even sages do not know. Even sages do not know, devas do not know. So this God is nothing but, like in maths we say, let the answer which is unknown be yes. So when you say God, it's like saying yes. So what that God is, you need to find the value of it needs to be derived right now. Finally. They say, let the answer be X and then finally you say X is equal to 5, whatever. So what that God is? All of us when we use the word God, we understand one thing, what? Creator of this universe. Because we know for everything there is cause. Shoe, when you see, you understand there is a shoemaker. Watch, watchmaker. Isn't it? So for everything you see a maker. So you say he is the maker. Ishvara is the maker. And we are all
his creation.
Right. So because this is mostly ladies' class, her creation. Because otherwise there will be problem. Is it his or her? So Ramgita was going to ask this question. Is God Mr. or Mrs.? He said, God is neither Mr. or Mrs., it is a mystery. It needs to be revealed.
It's beyond form and beyond...
Exactly. Form. So, the concept of God is understood as a creator. And we are all creation, his or her creation. Now, this is how a layman understands, right? Creator. Now, when you go to the scriptures in the beginning accept this theory, because knowledge has to be given from your level. They come down to the level of the student and then slowly rise the level of the student. That is how the knowledge has to be given. So they first initially accept, okay. Then slowly you start questioning, where was he sitting and creating? And if he is creating, he should have thorough knowledge of all that he is creating. So yes, then God is omniscient. Then, is he somebody who is limited, who doesn't pervade his creation? In the general context, does the creator pervade his soul?
No.
He is separately existing. But when we talk about God, we cannot limit there by saying he doesn't pervade the
creation.
He has to pervade the creation also. So we say creation is created by X, and that X has been named as God, who has to have thorough knowledge of everything that is created. So he is omniscient and he is all pervading. He pervades the entire universe. Now the moment you say this, so scriptures say, basically then what you are trying to say is, you are trying to say that the world must have definitely evolved out of the creator. The creator himself then must be the material cause. Generally, the material cause is outside the creator. Using the material cause, he produces, using his intelligence. And he remains separate in the worldly sense. But if you say by word God we mean somebody who is infinite, being infinite, he has to pervade this universe also, then the material cause must be himself. Like spider creating a web out of its own saliva. Spider's web is created from its own saliva. This is one example the Upanishad gives. Now this example has its own lacuna. Spider has a motive to create a web. Now for the world to evolve out of God, if you say God created it out of himself, was he feeling incomplete? Therefore to feel complete, he created the world out of himself, then if he felt incomplete, then he is not God. Read me. In the case of a spider has a motive to create a web from its own saliva, number one. And number two, having created the web, spider can be separate from the web. But can the world exist separate from God? Cannot. Therefore, there is some fallacy in this example also, except you have to understand that only small point, that just how spider spins the web out of itself, God from whom this world is emerged. So to solve this lacuna, another example is given. That is like vegetation that comes from earth. Now earth has no motive to create the vegetation. But there is a lacuna. And vegetable and earth can never be separate. Vegetation and earth. But there is one lacuna, which is earth is insentient. Vegetation that comes from it has life. So then you may understand that God is what? Jada. Right? Therefore, to solve that problem, they said, just like hair coming out of human. Now, human being is sentient. Hair that comes out of human being is jada. But this also doesn't explain complete.
But it grows.
Yeah, but it is by itself, hair doesn't have life, no? It's not a jada thing, right? I mean, it's not a conscious thing. So like that, any number of examples they may come up with, they will find lacuna. Because infinite cannot be given example from the finite world to be explained. Maximum it can be pointed for our help, real being. So then they say, when you say hair came out of human, and it is like naturally coming out, right? Whereas it is not something that has naturally come out, it is like waker and dreamer, or rope and the snake. From the rope, snake has come. But it is not that snake has come from rope for everybody. It is only for those who see the snake where there is a rope. Actually, there is no snake that has come from rope. It is due to your ignorance, you projected the snake out of the rope.
You think God is jad and...
God is not jad.
No, God is in jad and life. God is in...
God is what?
And how would you say God is... When you think the earth
God,
the
when you
life,
say... When you say God is consciousness.
Yeah, it's not jad.
It's not jad, obviously not. That is what I'm trying to say. Earth is jad, no? That example. Huh. When you say from earth, vegetation came.
Yes.
It then would amount to say God is jad. To solve that lacuna, they come up with another example. That is, from human, hair comes. Like that, divinity say, world is come.
So, patthar mein Bhagwan
hai.
Hai.
Dono mein hai.
We'll discuss now. We're not...
Dono mein
hai, na? He's not going to ask.
No, even I'm asking.
Patthar
mein is both.
So, then they give this example of rope and the snake. Just like how from the rope, snake is projected out of your ignorance. The entire universe is projected out of the divinity, out of the ignorance of the individual. Due to the ignorance of the...
Could you say that again, please?
There is a rope lying on the ground. Do you see rope as a rope? Or do you see snake where there is a rope?
You see rope as a rope.
Sometimes you see snake where there is a rope. But is there a snake there?
No.
There is no snake. But you are seeing snake.
Mm.
Like that, they say this world is created. God did not create. You can say rope created the snake, but did the rope create the snake? The ignorance of the rope.
No, ignorance of the viewer.
Yeah, ignorance of the rope. It is not of the rope. Ignorance is
in us.
Is in us. It is not in the rope. Are you with me? The same way, the ignorance of the individual has brought about this world. Like how from the waker's mind the entire dream comes. Now if from the waker's mind the entire dream has come, the stone in the dream, is it also come from Vedic mind are not busy.
In the dream, the story in the dream.
Yeah.
This is also from the Vedic mind.
Yeah.
So, to answer your question, then divinity is there in stone or not?
Yes.
Correct? I mean, you are now shaking head also. I mean, previously you were shaking head. Now I want you to, this way or this way, either way you shake your head. Doesn't matter. But shake your head. Otherwise you don't know where you are.
I'm silent at this point because at least you see maybe I'll...
No, no, at least you do not agree. You understand what we are trying to say. In the dream, you see a stone. The entire dream has come from Vekar's mind. When Amiji goes to sleep, from her mind, dream is projected. And in the dream, she is attending Vedantakosa with her friends. Right? Now, the chair on which she is sitting and attending is also projected by Amiji's mind. Correct? The table on which she is keeping the notepad and writing, that is also come from Amiji's mind. And the person who is writing it in the dream has also come from Vekar's mind, Amiji's mind. So the sentient beings and the insentient object of the dream has naturally evolved out of Amiji's mind. There is a right. So that means Amiji's mind pervades. Amiji's mind is there both in
the light,
the sentient and the insentient. So from that sense, if you say the world is evolved out of God, then God is there even in Patra.
So it's like if the world is evolved out of God's consciousness, then He pervades inanimate and
inanimate.
All objects, yes. Whether inanimate or...
Animate and inanimate.
But
the expression of divinity is not seen by everybody in inanimate. That depends on the subtlety of the person's growth, number one. And number two, the expression is not seen in the inanimate because the inanimate does not have the subtle body to express life. To explain this, in another context we have given this example. Water, when it is heated using fire, fire has two natures, heat and light. Water only expresses the heat aspect. The light aspect is not expressed. But when the same fire is used to heat or burn an iron rod, when that iron rod becomes hot, not only it expresses heat, it also expresses
light.
Similarly, consciousness has pervaded the sentient and the insentient, but in the insentient the subtle body is not there, therefore only the existence aspect is expressed, but not the chit aspect is expressed. Bhagwan is called as existence and conscious. Sat chit is the swarupa of Lord. The sat aspect is expressed in the insentient. The sat and chit aspect and the anda aspect is expressed in the human or living beings.
And the jad, sat is not there.
In the jad only, the rock exists, na?
Yeah.
Rock exists. Yeah. So the existence is expressed in the rock.
Yeah.
But the consciousness is not expressed.
So chit and...
Nor ananda. The chit and ananda is expressed in you, for example. Not only existence, chit also is expressed in you. You are conscious. And when you are in deep sleep, you are in ananda.
So when you get subtler, you can also see all this in the stone. Is that what you said earlier?
You can tell the stone from a murti.
Huh?
Like, sorry. What do you mean to me, Guruji? No, so what you were, this is what I'm trying to understand. So I have a question before we go. So if we are essentially created out of God's consciousness, what is it, how do we get it so wrong after being created out of pure consciousness that we actually look at a rope and see a snake or look at a piece of stone and...
So we are not coming to that. We'll come to that. Just starting the summary, right? Just starting the summary, slowly developing a thought. What the scriptures are trying to tell us. So, from God, this world is all that they want to say. Number one, the material cause, the intelligent cause, both is divinity. God has created, as it were, this world out of himself. The world is the world out of God only. And it is expressed. What is the nature of God? Sat Chit Ananda. So if you say, from the world, from God this world has come, then those qualities should be seen in the world, for which they are very clearly explaining, the sat aspect is seen in the insentient object. In the sentient beings, sat also is seen, chit is also seen, ananda is also seen, expressed. That same divinity has expressed itself as this universe. Okay, now Amiji was asking, then as I evolve, then will I be able to see divinity pervading even in rock? Yes. That is why in Hinduism, anything and everything is worshipped. Because there is nothing in the universe which is not divinity. Nothing in the dream world which is not Baker's mind. Isn't it? Everything has come out of Baker's mind. So everything is nothing but divinity. But then the problem is, wherever there is consciousness expressed in full swing, you are able to see it better. Wherever it is not a dull, seeing it becomes difficult. Isn't it? It's not that it is not there. If you can't see brass in a clean brass vessel, it is impossible for you to see in an oxidized brass vessel. Brass is there also, but in oxidized you cannot see because it is full of dirt covering it. Isn't it? If you have to see, if you are able to see the brass in a dirty brass vessel also, that means you are little subtler than the other fellow who doesn't just go by perception, who is able to infer. Are you with me? So that is what I was telling Amiji. Now, come back to this. So what Vedanta is essentially saying is, in the beginning of this chapter also I gave you this theory of perception, which Ramdita beautifully explains, Vedantic theory of perception. There is one theory which is called as realism. There is another theory which is called as
illusion.
No. First one is realism, other one is idealism. The idealism theory says, world is a projection of your thoughts. Realism says, objects themselves are real. It is not projected by your thoughts. If it is projected by your thoughts, then why everybody is seeing that object only? You should be seeing one pencil here, pencil that up. She must be seeing a notebook maybe. But everybody is seeing that up. So this is real, they say. This is real, it's not projected by your thoughts. It's one argument put forth by realists. Idealists say, this object is there, but you can't see it when your mind is not here. When your mind is here, can you see this?
Yeah. When the mind is here,
you can see it. When the mind is not here?
No.
So for you to see, the mind has to be there. So the realists say, this object is existing as far as you are concerned only with reference to your thought. Take away your thought, this object is not existing. This is one contention by idealism. I'm not going deeper now, because that discussion here is not. Vedanta says, but Vedanta theory of perception looks similar to idealism, but it's much deeper than idealism. Because Vedanta also ultimately will say that the day's entire world is nothing but projection of your thoughts. But when Vedanta tries to say that, there is a difference. When idealism says there is nothing else other than the subject, by subject they mean thoughts. By object they mean the object. So you understand the subject-object relationship. You are the subject, everything that you see is the object. So they say, see, what you see is the world. You are the seer. The seer, when you say, is not the eyes. You go deeper, it is the
mind.
And you go much deeper, it is the Atma. Right? Now, what the idealists are saying is, everything is a projection of the subject mind. For them, subject is the mind. Okay? So the mind is projecting. My mind is projected all of you, this cup, etc. There is nothing outside the mind. The contention of.
But Guruji, even then, like if all of us see it with our mind, we still see the cup and nothing else.
That's what realism says.
Yeah.
So, now I am just now talking what idealists are saying. Idealists are saying, there is nothing other than the subject's mind. Subject mind is projecting and the subject is experiencing. There is nothing other than the subject's mind. Subject mind, are you with me? Realism is saying, no. That is why everybody else is seeing that. So there is something outside. And in fact it says, there is no need for a perception, the mind. The object exists on its own, outside the mind on its own. There is no need role played by the mind. This is a claim by the realism. Vedanta says, both are to some extent right and to some extent wrong. And it brings in that and reconsiders. What it says is, there is only consciousness everywhere. Right? I'm just borrowing words to convey something. The consciousness there is striking the consciousness here, like in ocean. Water from there is clashing with water from here. What you call as one wave, another wave. So the consciousness from outside strikes the consciousness within you. The moment consciousness strikes from within you, the mind rises, like a bubble rises. Right? Like a bubble rises. And that mind is projecting a cup. Is projecting a cup where there is actually only consciousness. So that underlying consciousness aspect is brought by Vedanta in the theory of perception. So what Vedanta is saying is, you are right when you say the mind is projecting the world. But on what is it projecting? There must be something on which it should be projecting, no? So there is something outside the mind. But that something outside the mind, when you say, so therefore to that extent realism is right, there is something outside the mind. But when they conclude that outside the mind is object is real on its own, that is wrong. How Vedanta explains this is, the same cup you are also seeing, Rita is seeing, Avantika is seeing, Shivani is seeing. But if I ask you to explain the cup, suppose you are colorblind.
So each one's perception will be different.
Exactly.
I will receive the cup.
Exactly. So what Vedanta is saying is, there is something outside the mind and that is consciousness. There is something within the mind.
That is also consciousness.
In this play of consciousness, the mind comes and the mind projects
an object. This is the leela, this is the illusion.
Not only that,
when Shweta is now in the civilized, so-called civilized world, her senses have lost her sharpness.
What you think?
When she was in jungle, her senses was much more sharp.
So like even what they say for clairvoyant people who can see the aura, so they can physically, they can actually see it. Whereas today, so it's basic, anything like basically perception as to what you can see, different people.
What they are trying to say is, you go by your senses.
And the subtler you get, it will get more closer to consciousness.
That's what, when you go deepest, then you will see there is only consciousness, nothing else.
Clarity.
Like, why go that far? Even in science, everything is nothing but proton, neutron and electron. So scientists can see that. You see it differently, but he sees just that, nothing but proton, neutron and
electron.
So Vedanta is trying to say, when you go deeper and deeper, finally it is nothing but consciousness only. Like a rope lying there, only consciousness is there. But in the ooper, snake has come. Now the world has come. Now in this ooper, there are cause and effects. So in the ooper, as long as you are going in the ooper, don't bring in the theory and say everything is illusion. Then when the snake bites you, that also should be illusion. That time you don't shout and say, why only me? Why not my wife? You can't say that. You understand? That's what I say. So, at the surface level, is it clear? At the surface level, everything functions on cause and effect. So the surface level is called as vibhuti. The deeper level where it is in one is called yoga. So this entire chapter is nothing but vibhuti yoga. Even when this whole tamasha is going on, Brahman point of view, nothing is going on. From our point, lots of things are going on. Correct? From the ocean point of view, what waves are you talking about? There is only one. So from that angle when you say it is yoga, from various waves angle when you talk, it is vibhuti. Ultimately, everything that happens in the ocean is the vibhuti of ocean. But in between the bubble, after saying I'm a big bubble, I'm a small bubble, I'm a clean bubble, I'm a dirty bubble, right? I'm an intelligent bubble, I'm a stupid bubble, right? But everything is nothing but the glory of the ocean. Now, the bubble due to its ignorance, not seeing the glory of ocean there, it is attributing it to oneself. So this chapter is trying to break. The moment you understand, then what will happen is, the more you gain this knowledge, your perception will go in that direction, the bhakti will increase in you. That's why I said this chapter, this whole portion is bringing you that bhakti, that attitude, that perception. And perception matters. How you perceive. When you are lustful, you will see chicken as nothing but the taste and protein. When you have love, you will not see it as just a taste or an object or just protein. You see it as a like being. The perception, that perception you get by gaining this knowledge, by going through this chapter. In fact, this is a detailed chapter. In short, we already discussed these things in chapter 7 and 9. already little bit Vibhuti is discussed. Right? So here he goes into much more detail because Arjuna asked for it. And why did Arjuna ask about Vibhuti? Ask Lord Krishna to talk about the Vibhuti for him to be reminded so that he can develop this bhakti. Because there is a tendency in us, we don't have this knowledge, that we lose this knowledge to glorify everything to ourselves, that I have done it. I am doing it. It's happening because of me. I am big, etc. Isn't it? So, this Vibhuti Yoga concept is clear. Vibhuti means manifestation. Yoga means the reality which is under the manifestation. This entire chapter is called the Yoga of Supreme Manifestation. How the Supreme has come about in this world and pervades everything. Even though it pervades everything, not everybody sees divinity in everything.
Yoga means reality.
See, yoga comes from the root yuj, which means to unite, union, join. So in the ultimate, when you join, everything goes down. Ultimately, what is there is only consciousness. So yoga refers to that consciousness. Vibhuti refers to that world that has come from consciousness. So Vibhuti Yoga entirely means how all these glories have come from
consciousness.
Even though all has come from the consciousness, Sri Krishna, when Arjuna asks him to talk about some glories, he identifies the best because it's easier to see, the closest to divinity. Yes, sir.
But God is there in Jaya Kshetra, in everything.
Yes.
So even in the consciousness is there, even in darkness, in the negative energy,
yes,
also, it is also consciousness.
Yes.
It is there as much in that as
yes,
it is. Because everything is made up of consciousness.
Yes. Sun reflects. Sunlight falls on a mirror which is covered with dust. Also, it falls on another mirror which is clean. Where will it reflect better?
Which is clean.
Which is clean. If you are not able to see the reflected mirror, reflected sun in the clean mirror, will you be able to see it in a dusty mirror?
Yes.
So therefore when he talks about glory, he talks about the best of things.
Yes.
Right, so, and also, some of the things apparently negative, for example, Dyutam Chalayatam Asmi, I pointed out to you last week, people who gamble, the brilliance in them is me. Because to gamble you need little bit of smartness, no? Even when you play cards. Yeah? The stupid fellow will just go on playing, right? Other people, intelligent fellow will know what kind of cards the other people are. But little bit of intelligence. That intelligence is me. So he is trying to say that intelligence aspect is me. The other than the intelligence aspect is the prakriti. So when you understand the guna.
So once when you know that the sunlight is what it is, it doesn't matter where it reflects.
Correct. Thereafter you will not even ask for the prakriti, no? Arjuna is asking for the prakriti because he is not able to see, and for meditation purpose he is asking where all he can concentrate. See, F1 drivers, when they are driving the car, they by chance meet an accident and the car is going towards the side wall. Their eyes are focused on the wall, so automatically their hands are rotating the steering in the direction of the wall. So they are trained in such a way, when the eyes are seeing the wall and the hands are rotating the side towards the wall, the steering, they are trained to look the other way. When they look the other way, automatically the hands turn the steering other way. Like that, Sri Krishna is giving training to all of us through Arjuna. That even in something where the possibility of your thoughts to go away from divinity, how you can use this to go towards divinity. Please understand, end of the day, spirituality is what? Simple.
change your focus from the world to divinity. How to see divinity in everything? Today I am seeing the world, but in that, how to see divinity? So he tries to cover as much as possible. So in the beginning of this chapter, Sri Krishna says, the knowledge that I am going to give you now, nobody knows. Even the sages, the devas, nobody knows. Because I am the source of the devas and the sages. Very interesting, in the Upanishads, it says, those who do not know also knows. Those who knows, knows. Those who do not know also knows. Those who know, do not know. Those who don't know,
they know.
They know. You come back confused when the Upanishads talk like this. What they say is, those who know, know. Those who realize themselves, they know the self. Those who do not know, they also know. In the sense, they are also essentially God only. Like, supposing you have a meeting with one Mr. George on Monday. Right? Officially, the appointment is fixed by your secretary. Very important meeting, so you are very excited to meet Mr. John. We are waiting to get the appointment. Finally, after so many years, you got the appointment. So you don't want to miss that appointment and you have not met Mr. Jack, so you are very excited to meet him. This meeting is fixed for Monday. On Saturday, you go for a party. In the party, you meet Mr. Pillai. You are introduced to one Mr. Pillai. And you become very close to him. All along the back of your mind, you are thinking about meeting Mr. George on Monday. Actually, this Mr. Pillai whom you met is none other than Mr. George Pillai. Okay. So when you go on Monday, you will say, I don't know George. But actually you know him or not?
Yes.
Like that. So Upanishad says, even though you say you do not know, you
know.
But those who say they know, they don't know. Next he says, why? Because they are trying to say they know from the intellect. They are trying to understand God, putting him in a test tube and understand. That way they don't know. So those who say no, they don't know. And those who say don't know, they actually know. In the sense, they don't know objectively, they know subjectively. This is what Masters are trying to say. Are you with me? So now come back to this. So here Sri Krishna says, sages do not know. Devas do not know. Because essentially, I am the source of the entire universe. From me this entire universe has come. Right. So when he says this, Arjuna interferes and says, then please talk about in detail the glory, how you pervade this universe. Interestingly, first of all he says, okay, for your sake I will talk, but the list is endless. The list is endless. But for your sake, in brief, I will talk. And when he says he will talk, for your sake, in brief, first point that he says is, I am Atma Gudakesha. First thing he says, the glory is, I am seated in the hearts of all beings as Atma. Straight away he is trying to give us a clue, look within, don't try to look without. Because there is a tendency to look without. And then slowly he expands various aspects. And when he talks about that, he covers life also, he covers death also. The two extremes. He covers everything in between and the two extremes. He says, I am Yama, I am Rudra, I am Vishnu, and Kusumakar, the spring. Spring and Vishnu, symbols of life. Rudra,
Yama,
and he in one place he says, I am death itself. Right? These are symbols of death and two extremes. And all that he is trying to convey is, you can see me in life, you can see me in death. That is where I pointed out to you, when you understand the philosophy, to the extent you understand the philosophy, to that extent the situations which are negative and extreme negative situation, what you call as death, also from a philosopher's point of view is nothing but what? Opportunity to inquire. Is a matter of inquiry, not a matter of grief. For a Vedantin, death would be matter of inquiry. And for a non-Vedantin, death would be a matter of grief. So, in death, you can see me. In life, you can see me. In everything, you can see me. Within, without. Above, below. In life, in death. In all extremes, you can see me. So he gives various pointers. Identify with that. Then, of course, I said certain things when we talked about, like he said, I am the righteousness in all those who want to win. You know, so he is emphasizing on dharma. Like that, every aspect he covers. Actually, this starts from verse 19. Very good. And then he finally says, this list will be endless. Okay, all this I told you is only a very, 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 very small brief of my glory. Then a very important verse is this. Whatever glory you see, understand that as my glory. Now, how do we understand? When somebody says, appreciates you, oh, you've done a fantastic job. Of course we say, oh no, not at all, not at all. We say that, right? But inside, there is this thing that I have done. So this verse, if you reflect upon, it's trying to tell us that from within, if the consciousness is not enlivening, right, what glory can you achieve? In the Keno Upanishad, the gods are having a fight with demons and they take the help of Brahman to fight against demons. And with the help of Brahman, they fight with the demons and they win over them. And they are having a party to celebrate their victory. And when they are having party, they have completely forgotten the help Brahman has given them. They think they have only achieved everything. So everybody is saying bottoms up and they are enjoying. And that time, suddenly they see in the sky, the apparition is there.
See, oh my God, we have not completely eliminated the demons.
There is something there. What is it?
So then Indra tells Vayu Bhagavan, Agni Bhagavan. First Agni Bhagavan goes. And when Agni Bhagavan goes closer and closer to the apparition and says, who are you? Apparition says, you are asking me, who are you? Who are you? Agni Bhagavan says, you don't know me, I am Agni. I torch everything. Acha? You are such a powerful person, you are saying. Okay, torch this blade of grass if you can. And puts a blade of grass. Agni releases little bit. Because a little bit itself will finish it off. Nothing happens. Goes on releasing completely, it could not. Scotch that. It comes back running. And Indra then sends Vayu. Vayu also goes with a lot of arrogance.
Same story, Vayu comes back. Then Indra himself goes. Indra means mind. Himself goes with humility. Right? When he goes with humility, then Brahman slowly reveals itself.
You must remind yourself of that story here. Therefore I brought this story. Like that, whatever glory you see within and without is actually the glory of Bhagavan. Tera na mera. That attitude. So Arjuna is told here, from me this world has come as an amsha, just a small dot. Beyond that I am pervading. Like only little aspect of Vekar's mind has come as and projected as the dream. Beyond that the Vekar's mind is expanding much more. Like that I am there infinitely expanded. Therefore, bring about that humility. So this chapter emphasizes divinity from an analytical view. Next chapter emphasizes divinity in a synthetic view. If you say God is what has become the world, then you can say you can see God in everything or everything in God. Seeing God in everything is this chapter. Seeing everything in God is next chapter. Seeing God in everything is chapter 10. Seeing everything in God is chapter 11, which is Vishwarupa Darshan. Okay. So the more and more you understand this portion, when it comes in your bhav, then you will not arrogate anything to yourself. Everything would be attributed to a divinity. You will develop the attitude of, I am a spoke in the wheel of life. And thereafter, using that grace of the Lord, by the grace of the Lord, whatever kind of glory that you are in now, you will use that glory for what? Earlier we said in this very same chapter, parasparam bhavayantaha. Right? They talk about me. Right? They listen about me. In other words, you will use it to spread the glory of divinity, not to spread your glory. In other words, using that energy, you would want to go closer and closer to the self within and not waste that glory in material acquisition and enjoyment per se. That's the idea he's trying to do. Be grateful to whatever you got, use it to get closer to the self. Don't abuse it. If you do not understand this, then what will you do? You will start abusing it. That is why he gave one example, like power in the hands of Rama, which was never abused. So whatever level of glory you have, that glory you use it for the self-emancipation only. For your self-emancipation and for the emancipation of self externally in everybody. Nothing else. With that this chapter comes to an end. So when we gave this summary today, we tried not to get into the details of every glory because which we have already covered. That's why we took so much time. In fact, many people don't even talk about chapter 10 and 11. Just give out summary and go to straight away 12. But many pointers give a lot of interesting vision, you know. So therefore we went into details. Like one I told you, Yutam Chalaya Tamas. Like the intelligence in the gambler also. So even in a dirt you can see me. And if you understand that, then you will never say why this situation has been given to me. Even that situation you will use and convert it into positive. Because you will be able to see divinity there also. Let's continue.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
नारायणायेति समर्पयामि नारायणायेति समर्पयामि।